Welcome to another exciting episode of the Darren Batchelder Multifamily Real Estate Investing Show. Today we have the privilege of hosting Igor Shaltanov, a former pro athlete turned commercial real estate investor. From self-managing single-family units to co-founding the Avista Fund, Igor has made a significant shift towards large-scale multifamily projects and land deals. His hands-on experience and strategic approach to real estate syndication have established him as a key player in the industry. But before we get started, we partner with highly experienced operators to acquire and operate value-add multifamily properties in growth markets. If you are an accredited investor and would like to be considered for new investment opportunities, visit darrenbatchelder.com/investor call and schedule your discovery call. This episode is sponsored by Cashflow Portal, real estate syndication software that accelerates capital raising. I'm both an LP and a GP in many multifamily deals. I've used many different software applications for the capital raising process, and I like Cashflow Portal the most. I'm so confident in the software and the Cashflow Portal team that I've become an investor in the company. If you are a syndicator looking for a software platform, then let the Cashflow Portal team know that you heard about them on Darren's podcast, and you will automatically receive 3 months off an annual contract. You can find the company at cashflowportal.com.
Welcome to Darren Batchelder's Real Estate Investing Show. Each week, you will learn how to grow your wealth through real estate investing, be introduced to the players that are getting it done, and learn how you can get involved. And now, here's your host, Darren Batchelder.
Hello, everyone. Today we have a very special guest. We've got Igor Shaltanov. Igor, appreciate you coming on the show.
Thank you, Darren. Thank you for having me. So I'm, you know, beyond excited.
Absolutely. So Igor and I have known each other for a while. We've talked about to each other for a while over the phone. We've invested in some of the same deals, and he's doing some very cool stuff and very interested to hear what he's got going on. So with that, the first question I typically ask is how many properties and how many units you're invested in?
There's a lot more to be done, but we got 3,000 units as of right now, and it's all limited partner position, right? It's not JP or anything like that. So, but it's a lot of units, a lot of different properties, and then, you know, a lot of different experiences as well.
Fantastic. So that's all on the LP front. But I did see that you had a fund that you were raising capital for. So tell me a little bit about that fund and what you guys were raising capital for. Yeah. And the types of deals that you go after.
Yes, excellent. Great question. Thank you, Darren. And then I'll go through the last couple of deals, right? The one was a Madison Overland Park, and it's a beautiful community townhomes, 200 units. And it's an hidden, I would say it's a hidden gem in Kansas City, right? Kansas side. It's a brand new development, right? Really nice, absolutely walkable community as well. So, and we really like that because of the assumption of the loan. So we had like 3.75%, right? The APR on the loan, which is absolutely insane, unheard of right now. And we closed in November 2023. And then it was
how much time was left on that loan?
I think there's 3 years though.
Yeah, that's great.
Yeah. So,
rates are 6 or 7%, it's nice to get a 3.75 rate. That's for sure.
So we thought it's going to be a great opportunity. And then the business plan is like 1.5, like maybe 2 years the most, right? So we have a great cushion of time to just complete the full renovation and business plan.
Awesome.
And then we stopped a little bit on the multifamily side and we said, okay, what we're going to do next? And we just discussed that briefly right before the recording start.
Right.
We actually went to the land development and entitlement deal. So we really looked into the market and we said, okay, what can we do better or a little bit better than just a multifamily in that specific environment, right, of the market? And we were working with a partner he's in California, and it was 275 houses, right? So it was just basically the big parcel of land. And then what they're going to do, they're going to go to the city and obtain all the permits, right, necessary. And then they're going to sell it to the big national developer, right, like Pulte or maybe KB Homes. So that was the last deal we actually closed just a couple of weeks ago. And super excited about that. There's a little bit higher returns and higher potential as well. So I'm not necessarily saying it's higher risk. Maybe it is, but it's a great play, I think, in the environment of right now. And it's full equity. There's no loan. There's no bank like leverage and stuff like that. So just the equity play there.
So, you know, it's people talk about the term value add all the time, right? And both of us kind of started in the multifamily world. And value add would be buying a property that has some value that you can provide to it, whether it's painting the exterior or putting in amenities or renovating the interiors. But a land play, you know, is a value add also, right? So you're buying raw land, and then you guys, your business plan, it sounds like, is to get that land entitled and then sell the land to another developer who will develop it.
Absolutely.
Is that correct?
The idea was, and that's why we really like the idea. So there was a five different parcels of land, and just for example, right? And it's owned by different people. So some of them younger people, some of them older, some of them doesn't even know they have a land, right? As the ownership, because it's been sitting around for 25 years in the trust account of the family. So and the first tough thing is to go and find all the owners of the parcels. And you got five parcels, which is a little bit smaller. It's not interesting for a big developer to buy those, right? But if you're going to be able to combine them together, that's a different play. So now you can put down like 275 units of whatever you're building, right? And it's a lot of value. So that's the first stage, right? When you just basically go hunt for the land in different pieces, different parcels, and assemble them together in one big piece.
Because the developer is going to want one big track that's contiguous to develop on. So that's a great point. I didn't even
developer.
Think about
it. So if you look at the business model, right, it's rare enough when developer in the full integration, meaning so he'll buy the raw land. I mean, let's say he'll find the raw location, like the land, assemble the parcels, go to the city. It might take you 3 years, might take you like a couple years, might take you forever, might never get to this point, right? So the developer business model is to build as fast as possible and to sell as fast as possible. That's where they make money. That's where the professionals, right? The professional builders and sellers, marketers, right? So if they go into the roots of the entitlement of the land, they don't know the officials, they don't know how to, you know, local. And again, just think through the lens of the KB Homes. They're building multiple sites all over the nation.
Right.
Do they know the Florida law? Do they know? They might be, but not as deep. They're not connected to the roots. They're not connected to local government and stuff. They cannot influence decisions as fast. You know what I mean? So, and our partner he's like 40 years doing one thing. So he's entitlement land. So he knows exactly where to go, exactly what the people, what the decisions should be made and stuff like that. So that's the second stage, right? When you go out to the city and you say, listen, so we're going to bring you 275 income revenue streams, right? Because they're going to be paying taxes to you, right? To the city. And it's a big community, right? And you got 275 people who can consume the products, right? Who's going to be part of the city and stuff like that. So, and that's huge, right? If you can just sell it to the city, that project, they're going to be all in for that project. They're going to give you like a green light for permits. They're going to speed up some processes and stuff. So this is the second stage of that thing. So, and then the lastly is, so if you know exactly what you're doing, so you have a leverage, power of leverage, right? So you can say, okay, so if we want to put infrastructure for that specific neighborhood, let's say, right? So who is going to be responsible to build the roads? Who's going to be responsible for water pumps, sewer, right? You can always negotiate, like not a lot of people know that. You can go to the city and get the tax credits and apply those, you know, incentives. And there's a lot more to be done. So, but when you do that as a package, right? So you bought the smaller land parcels, right? You assemble them together. You negotiate, you got all the permits first, right? You negotiate with the city and you put the tie-ball, right? And you give it to the developer and they say, oh, you know what? I'll pay a little bit more, right? But then my process is going to be sped up in 2 years, right? So, and that's why, that's where the value at, I would say.
Gotcha. So, you know, I'm talking to some multifamily guys that still stay multifamily value add, but they get the phone call. There's a lot of off-market deals that happen that the brokers only want to talk to five or six people and get the deal done. There's other marketed deals that they put out and they may not even trade in this market. You know, they may, all the bids may be below the loan price to make it work. And so it doesn't even trade. So those folks are focused on building the relationships and getting that off-market call. So you're one, and I've had other people kind of shift from value add multifamily to land. So why the shift to land?
I mean, for us, number one, with multifamily, we're still in multifamily, right? We're just looking for a good deal. So, and then it's a little bit harder to find, but sure enough, we'll find it in the next months or a couple of months, right? So that's one. And then the second one, because again, there is a time gap, right? We said, okay, do we have a best deal on the table right now? And we look at it's my partner and me, or look at each other and say, no, we don't. Like, do we want to go after like mediocre deal or like not as good deal? So probably not. And then the environment right now is pretty risky, right? Because there's a lot of different pieces pop out from the multifamily space, right? There's a loan problem, there's a management problem, there's multiple layers of different problems. And we said, okay, let's do land, right? And there's a couple of reasons why. There's a lot less time frame. Like there's only 2 years to play. 2 years. So, and now we're thinking through the investor lens, right? They can experience the returns in 2 years. Like what could be better than that? The velocity of your capital, right? Speed up by two. So meaning, so right. You can make a lot more, right? By the end of year five.
Or multifamily, almost every business plan is a 5-year business plan. And so your money is tied up for much longer.
Yeah, even with medicine, I mentioned Kansas City, right? There's a 3-year assumption, right? Meaning after 3 years, there's possibility of capital event. There's possibility. So, and we would love to be on a shorter time frame. And again, we're speaking through the capital velocity, right? The last of the capital, how fast you can multiply your money. So that was the one decision. Because of this shorter time frame. So that's what I'm trying to say. So the second was probably it's a lot more riskier, not a lot more, but it is riskier, I would say, than just multifamily because it's existing, right? People are paying the rent. You got some cash flow already. So whether the land, it's all unknown, right? Because you don't know if city will approve the plans. You really rely on the partner if he knows what he is doing. So, but then where I'm going with that, but then the return is, it's the same, like it's 20%+ return. So we didn't even advertise, but realistically, it's going to be more than 25, maybe 25 to 30%, right? And this is the higher return as well. So that's what we said, okay, let's give people something alternative too, because we're targeting 15% right now IRR, plus minus, right? Mm-hmm. And again, the environment is not favorable. So it's more like 15 than 20. Right? That's my projection of my experience, right, in the past. And then we said, okay, do the people love to see 25%, like 20 to 25? We put 20 plus, so we don't want to advertise 25 because it feels like it's not, something is not right. Something is off, right? So we said 20% plus. So that was the second why. So because we were targeting higher returns and giving the opportunity for investors.
So I'm not in a lot of land deals, but I've talked to some folks that do them, and another interesting aspect that came out is that there's not a lot of cash outflow. Like, so, you know, you buy a multifamily property, there's a lot of expenses that you have to cover, right? Where you buy land, the property tax is very low on undeveloped land. You know, so until you start the construction, the carrying cost of land is pretty low from what people are sharing with me. And there's different strategies to offset that in its entirety. Some people will, you know, buy land and then, you know, get an ag exemption or we'll sell the hay, you know, and that will offset the property taxes and so they're cash flow neutral while they're during their hold period, and they're working towards, you know, getting the entitlements and improving that land in the meantime.
Absolutely. Yeah.
So you're invested in a lot of deals, 3,000 units, like 20 deals. You know, what are some of your learning lessons?
And again, maybe it's me, but there's a couple of them. Like the second you start to dig underground, so meaning the ground up developments and constructions, what I mean by deep renovations. So there's so many X factors. So, and then we found ourselves in the not best position when we go into the ground up developments. And we do
explain that
we do get capital call on a couple of deals, right? Which is both, right? One of them ground up, completely ground up, so raw land to the building. And there's multiple layers again. So the rain started to pour, so we couldn't dig the dirt. So it's got to dry out for multiple months and dry it out. And then so the supply chain just constrained. So there's there's a constant delay in the plumbing fixtures, and then we got delay in electric components as well. And then it's all rolled up into the problem was a loan, right, in the construction. So by the end of the day, so it came out to the capital call, right? It was not enough capital to cover the construction, right? And that was the one experience. The second experience was, so we go into the conversion, right, from the hotel into the studios and just apartment studios. And the city came up, and it was a 1970s building, right? The city came up and they said, okay, you got to reinforce the basement. You got to reinforce all the pillars, right? And it's ended up being like a twice the capital.
Wow.
Yeah. So the projected, right, renovation budget. And then the second problem came up when they said, okay, it used to be a hotel. Now it's going to be the fully occupied apartment building, right? And it's 100% occupied, 90s, right? Occupied. And then the electric systems are so old, you got to change the whole electric circuit.
Holy cow, really?
So that was the second problem. And the same thing with the plumbing. They said the diameter of the pipes are not good, and it's all old pipes. You got to change the whole infrastructure for the plumbing. So basically where I'm going was that the biggest learning lesson was, okay, if you want to do ground-up development or construction, plan accordingly, I would say, right? Do not expect it to be perfect. Not expect it to be on budget. And again, I feel like it's not a surprise to anybody, right? Because it's always the time delay, and then it's always like more on the budget side as well. So, and for us, it was just an experience of saying, okay, if you build in like a larger building, is it the same if you build in like a single family home? Because I never built myself apartment building, but I built a single family homes. And then it was the problem with budget, problem with timing, and all that issues, right? The contractors issue, right? They didn't show up and all. And sure enough, it was not different with apartment complexes, right? And it's not our experience, but I heard some stories when contractors just left, all of them, just left the site and they moved to another site because they were paying more to that other site. So, and then the guy just ended up being without the construction team. So anyways, there's so many different stories. We learned that lesson, so we said, okay, let's focus on existing multifamily, right? We just focus on light renovation, instant value add, and it's going to be like a core asset inside of the fund.
That's good to know. I mean, like, until you do it, right, you don't fully learn it, right? I mean, you can listen to a podcast like this and learn from somebody else, but things come up that you definitely learn as you go on.
And I'm not saying it's a bad business model or plan. It works. You know, a lot of people are doing it and it works, but you got to plan with anticipation of certain things. That's what we learn a lot. So we say, listen, so there's a better returns, but it might be not better. Why? Because by the time it's all finished, it's going to be only 2x multiplier, right? Instead of 3, which is the projected in the beginning. So,
yeah. So, you know, learning whether everything has to go perfect in order to hit that number.
Yeah.
So what are you doing? Well, you've talked about some of the shift to land and whatnot, but today is a very different market than it was, you know, 2 or 3 years ago. So how does that change the way you look at deals?
Good question. So I think we'll look a lot at the leverage, the bank leverage. So, and again, the reason number three was no leverage for the bank, right? For the land play. So right. We said, we're not going to be on the mercy of Federal Reserve, you know, doing something with the rates. We said, okay, it's going to be just a full cash play, all right? There is no bank. And the only unknown, it's a time frame. Is it going to be done in 18 months, 24 months, or 36 months? So that was the only thing. So, and then with the multifamily right now, we just really look at the leverage. So what does that look like? Is it bridge loan? What's the terms for the bridge, right? And then when it's going to be due, right? And then when they need to refi. And maybe the agency loan, it's a way to go right now. Maybe with a shorter time frame, but it's going to be agency and it's fixed and everybody's agreed to be there in like 5 to 7 years. But they say it's stable, right? There's no uncertainties, right? There's a business plan. And we better wait until then than just take that risk, right? And I think this is the biggest plan right now we're looking at. And then the business plan for sure. So is it realistic? So you guys want to, you know, change, let's say, paint, right, on the kitchen and you want to charge $400 rents, like more. So, you know, I don't think it's realistic, right? There's got to be some pretty interesting, I would say, play. What do you want to change? So do you want to change the fixture? Do you want to change the paint, right? The flooring. So what's going to be appealing for the customer? So, and then lastly, it's a market. So let's say we found one really good partner, right? He's doing, I would say, product, which is nobody is doing. He's doing like extra value adds. He's doing like a beautiful finishes, A+ finishes inside of the facility, right? But then it's in Phoenix. People are willing to pay that much, right? People who lives in Phoenix, they do have an income, right? And they have a spare income to pay a little bit more for a better quality of life, right? And it might work in the Phoenix market. But if you move somewhere in them, you know, in the rules of Houston, right? So they're not gonna be able to pay that much, right, for the apartment building.
Yeah, that's absolutely right. Learning the market. And, you know, you talked about the loans. You know, a few years ago, a lot of limited partners weren't really asking about the loans. And if you talk to syndicators, it's funny how things go full cycle, because syndicators, you know, when I first got involved about 5 years ago, everybody was talking fixed rate agency, and then rates started going up, and then rates dropped again. And then syndicators felt like they were stuck because they're in agency loans. Yeah. The property is worth a lot more because a buyer can take, you know, and get lower interest rate, but they have this huge prepayment penalty and they can't sell. So then the syndicators say no more long-term fixed rate, and they get into bridge loans that don't have the prepayment penalty. And then all of a sudden interest rates go up by the most they've gone up in 40 years. So it's a difficult game to try to figure out that play.
You know, that's a good point. So I think there, and thank you for bringing that up. So my partner was always, he's a numbers guy, right? He's more like a mathematician, right? And he's got a structure in mind. So, and one of the points we were like, go to syndicators and ask for deals and ask for what's going on internally, like what's going on with that deal. So it's going to be like, what type of leverage do you have on the project? And then, so we didn't settle for anything but the agency loan, like the fixed rate. We were looking for a fixed rate, maybe not even agency, but it could be like a local bank, but it's a fixed rate, even if it's 5%. We were like, okay, that's fine. So, but it's fixed for 5 years, for example, like 7 years. Right. So, and then there's a couple loans, there's a couple deals we really, really like. Maybe me really like, I like those things. And I said, listen, they got a really good bridge loan, right? It's like 3 year +1 +1. So it's basically 5 years. And they prepaid the rate. They just pay the insurance for that rate, right? And then, you know, both of those things are like having the problems right now, right? Because, you know, the insurance, it's prepaid, but it's still, it's the margin of the margin of returns got eaten up by those, you know, pumps, right, and interest rates.
Right.
I mean, they're sustainable. They're not losing money, right? But they might stop distribution because they're saying we want more cash, right? Because we're going to be coming due in a couple of years or maybe a year from now for another rate cap purchase. And as you know, right now, the rate cap price is just insane.
Right.
If it's, it used to be like $100,000, like $50,000. Now it's like almost $1 million for the same thing. So, and then the people got in trouble anyways. What I'm saying is, if we would just be not emotional, but more like pragmatic and saying, so let's do just a fixed rate on all the deals, so we're going to be in a safe position, right? Because we became like a little bit more emotional saying, oh, it's a great deal. You know, I like that amazing business plan and I like the location maybe or facilities, right? And so we settled for that and we had a problem with those, you know, floating rates.
Yeah, for sure. I like your idea of buying a low rate, you know, fixed rate assumption deal because you're still getting the low rate, but it's fixed. If rates come down, you're still, you know, within the market. And, you know, you have a relatively short time horizon on it. It's 3 years. So that's attractive. So talk about the fund in terms of, are you just putting one deal in the fund or you are just putting,
one? So, yeah.
So it's one property, one opportunity into the fund. Is this the first fund that you guys have come out with?
Yes, it's so we've done a couple of deals right now. And then, like I said, the best thing is as you get the blind pool fund, right? So the people are asking, so what is that for? Where it's going to be allocated, right? And then what's going to be the property looking like? So when you got deal specific thing, it's, and again, that's from my experience. Again, it's so much easier to just show it to people to buy into the project, right? And then really to understand what's going to be happening. So that's why we just came up with just a fund of funds, right? And then going after one deal at a time.
Yeah, so that makes sense. So this was your first deal. Did you bring on outside investors into that fund?
Yes.
So this was this the first deal? Because you mentioned in the beginning that 3,000 units were all limited partner.
No, it's not the first deal. So.
Oh, it's not. It's not the first fund.
No.
Okay. So the other, you had other funds that invested into other multifamily.
Other deals, yes, correct.
Gotcha. So what are you hearing from investors today? I mean, investors are more nervous. They're more scared. They're more, are you not seeing that? I mean, everybody I talk to kind of says that people are more cautious about putting out their capital.
Yes. They more, I would say they're more skeptical about multifamily specifically, right? Because, and again, especially if you experience, right? Because on a cash flow side, right? If you can get 5% on your cash at US Bank, like what could be better than that, right? Then you can withdraw your cash tomorrow, right? Or maybe in a couple of days from now. So, because there's some insane.
There's no upside, but like at the same time, I'm in a lot of multifamily deals and a lot of those multifamily deals have cut off distributions.
There's no upside, like
you know. So it's a matter. Well, a year from now, it may be a completely different story. But you know, in the last year and a half, it's like okay, you're getting all these distributions. Then all of a sudden, one by one, they're getting shut off. And you know, if you rely on that capital, you know, that's a painful point.
Yeah, no, you're right. And then the second thing is, so they're skeptical, but they're looking for deals. They are actively looking for deals. But the problem is the deals should be very appealing to the public, right? To the people, to investors. So example will be like the assumption of the loan is very appealing proposition, right? Because what could be the risk? Like what could be other risks? Like the business model deal go through, right? The construction team is not going to do the job. So there's very, very limited risk on that deal. Right. And the people say, oh, yeah, we're going to do that. So we're going to vote with capital, right, to do that deal. So what I'm saying is there's got to be a deal right now, which is very, very appealing. It has a story and has a background behind that. So if a couple of years ago it was just good enough to say it's a multifamily deal, which is going to be 5-year business model, right? And we doubled the money. So today is like, okay, what's the details? Tell me a little bit more of the story. So what's the appealing factors of that deal? So
that's you hit it on the head for sure. Tell me about the hotel deal. Is that the only one that you did that in that regard, that it was a conversion? Because you see, commercial real estate is being written up every day, right? And especially office, that there's huge, vacancy. And so the idea of repurposing properties is top of mind. How do we take buildings that are already there and then repurpose them into multifamily or into some other type of use? And, when COVID happened, hospitality was in the dumps, right? Nobody was traveling in the beginning. And so, hotels got hit. And I would imagine that, some hospitality deals looked very favorable to find another use for it. Mm-hmm. Was that the play there?
Absolutely. I was about to bring it up. So I'm talking about COVID-19. And then the story was, it was 2020, I would say. The two older partners, I think one of them 89, the other one 91, they own the hotel, right? And it's Oakland and Jack London Square. That's the name of the place. So, and if you ever been in Oakland, California, Jack London Place, Jack London Square. It's by the ocean and it's a beautiful plaza. And it's up and coming area, it's a lot better than just 5 years ago, let's say, right? And it's going to be a lot better 5 years from now as well. So before COVID-19, they put out on the market for $21 million, that same building. And then when the COVID hit, and then the operator, he was like hunting for that property because it's in a beautiful, beautiful location, just a nice place to be at. And when the COVID hit, they went from, I think it was 70% occupancy, right, to about 10 or 15, like something.
Holy cow.
Something like, very, very tough to manage, right? And they were paying cash, I would say daily, right, to sustain that property, right? Because there's so many expenses, right, and the people are working still. So, and what happened, when the operator came up to them, they said, we're going to sell it, right? We're ready to sell. We want to get out. And because they've been older, right, and the COVID happened, so instead of 21, they paid $14 million. So,
awesome.
And there was two plays. One play was the hotel itself, the building, the structure, but then there's a parcel of land next to it, including that same $14 million purchase, right, $14 million purchase, which was a restaurant, right, and just an empty parcel of land. So, which is buildable as well. So you can tear down. I mean, there's multiple things you can do on that land, and they bought it all together for 14. So, and it, for me, the story was super appealing, right? It's not even one, it's like a two parcels, because you can, subdivide those things. You can build another, whatever, smaller, maybe property, maybe any type of development you want to do. So, and I said, that's amazing. We're going to do that. Right. And then, they put up the plan of renovation, that thing. So, and then again, it was super exciting because they want to bring it up new, right? And it's going to be I would say, unbelievable experience for the people who live there, because it's like a resort style, because it's already a hotel, right? There's a beautiful pool in the middle, so you can get workout rooms. So it's a great feeling. So I've been there multiple times during the construction. So I said, wow, that's a great feeling. So I want to live here. Even I want to live here, right? Because it's, nice looking building. So. But then when the problems start to arise, and then we got, reinforcement, the concrete, the basement, so the plumbing, the electric issues. So, it became a different story. So, and from, I think there's 3x multiplier, like I said, it became 1.5, maybe 1.9. The projection 1.9, but I doubt it right now. So, but again, this is just a learning experience and learning progress of, you going out and chasing the great ideas, but maybe not the best execution, but reality is a little different always,
right?
Especially the deeper you go, the deeper you remodel, the deeper you construct, right? The deeper you want to change something, right? The more X factors will pop up.
Right. And so there's, what you can control on the front end and what you can't control. you know, and learning from each of those experiences to see, you know, can you pull more things in that you can control or that you could have visibility to, you know, earlier in the process, this decision process. So, Igor, if people want to reach out to you, what's the best way for them to get a hold of you?
Yeah, I was a professional water polo player in my past, though. So you can go to winrealestategame.com and download the ebook. Once again, it's winrealestategame.com. So download the ebook, or you can go to the website, avistafund.com, or just email me, igor@avistafund.com, and I'll be happy to respond.
That's awesome. So polo player, that's awesome. So professional athlete to real estate investor, love it. Hey, Igor, I appreciate you taking the time. Listeners, I hope that you enjoyed that one. Until next week, signing off.
Darren, thank you very much. It was just my pleasure to share some experience then. Thank you.
Absolutely.
Thank you for having me.
Thank you for listening to Darren Batchelder's Real Estate Investing Show at darrenbatchelder.com. If you liked the episode, please provide us with a 5-star review on Apple Podcasts or your podcast platform of choice. If you already provided us with a 5-star review, then thank you, and please share the show with a friend.